You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
It's our last episode of the year, and wow, what a year it's been. And we've got a great show for you tonight with fun guests who will make you laugh, hopefully teach you something, and inspire you to keep on kicking on into 2026. Thanks for tuning in.
From Heels Down Mag, a podcast where horse pros chat about what's happening in the horse world over drinks. Welcome to Happy Hour.
I'm Justine Griffin.
I'm Jessica Payne.
And I'm Ellie Wozniacka. Welcome to episode 143 of Heels Down Happy Hour.
Guys, it's our last episode of 2025.
I know. I can't believe we're in December. Happen?
It flew by, like these last few months, like holy cow, you know?
It went.
I feel like once Halloween happens, everything is just boom, boom, boom.
Snowballs, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know, it's nuts. But I hope you all had a nice Thanksgiving.
We did. It was amazing.
Nice. I had Chinese food.
Oh, look at you.
So, yeah, Matt went to his parents and we always have to do things like separately, right? So like usually I'll go somewhere for Christmas and he'll go somewhere for Thanksgiving, but he didn't want me to starve. And since I don't cook, he bought me just a crap ton of Chinese food. So I had a lot of Chinese food for Thanksgiving.
Oh my
Sounds
gosh.
Perfect.
It was great. I 10 out of 10 would recommend.
So this episode is brought to you by Zoetis. All right, Ellie, so I hear you have a very Ellie holiday drink for us for this episode.
Of course, but also, you know, it has to be festive, right? So we're going to go with the classic eggnog.
Okay.
So it does require some work, but it is worth it. So you're going to need 4 large eggs separated. You're going to need 1/3 cup plus like a tablespoon-ish of sugar. 1 pint whole milk, 1 cup heavy cream, 1 1/4 ounces of your favorite bourbon, and then 1 1/4 ounces of like a dark rum, and then 1 teaspoon of, you know, your grated nutmeg. So in a bowl with like a stand mixer, you're going to beat your egg yolks and your sugar until the yolks lighten in color and the sugar's completely dissolved. Then you're going to add your milk, your cream, your bourbon, your rum, and your nutmeg and keep on stirring. Then you're going to move your mixture to a medium mixing bowl and set it aside. Now you're going to play with the egg whites. You're going to put those in a bowl and then beat those into soft peaks. Then with your mixer still running, you're going to gradually add the remaining that 1 tablespoon-ish of sugar and you're going to beat until the stiff peaks form. And then you're going to gently fold your egg whites into the mixture, you chill it, and you serve it. This is dessert in a cup.
I'm going to say, this is very fancy.
Yeah.
Eggnog, I have a very bad relationship with it from like high school. And unfortunately, that's the first memory I have of eggnog where I'm just like, oh, I don't know if I ever need to get drunk off of eggnog again. But
I never liked eggnog. Like, that's not, but that is a very Ellie drink.
For sure.
I mean, I feel like you have to this is like something you're not going to have seconds of, for sure.
Yeah. No. It's like one festive drink. Yeah. It's heavy in your tummy, but it, yeah, totally. I agree.
But it's worth it.
So moving on to news, I thought, you know, since this is our last episode of the year, it'd be fun to do like top headlines, like top stories of the year, top things in your year. So yeah, whoever wants to go first, let me know.
I can go first. So this year, I was so excited to see the U.S. Equestrian Open. It was the first year. And for our listeners that don't know, the U.S. Equestrian Open was something that was brought into play that the U.S. Equestrian Board decided that they wanted to grow the sport's awareness, exposure, and fan engagement. So they put together over $1 million in prize money this year. So it's across show jumping, eventing, and dressage, the 3 Olympic sports. And they had ESPN was the coverage with the USEF network as well. And so they brought it and each had like a final. So you had qualifiers and then you went to the final. The final for eventing was at Morven Park. The final for dressage was at Desert in California. And the final for jumping was actually really cool. It was the last week of the Wellington circuit. So it was really fun. Yeah. So you had like all your qualifiers and stuff like that. And everybody kind of was different, but they put in all this money and had a lot of this engagement. So it was super fun to like see all the different ones. Like if you don't follow one of the sports, then you see this because they ended up over the series, just this across the 20 qualifiers, they had 349 runs, 179 horses, and 115 athletes with 8 different nations competing. So it's a great like first start for, you know, like Morven had a ton of money for eventing. So it's just bringing hopefully more and more awareness and we can get more people, you know, really talking about each of the sports and following along.
Yeah, it was super fun to watch. I really enjoyed watching the dressage. We had several actually past interviewees of the podcast and Americ, Lainey Ashker, who rode in it. And it was just cool to really to root for your home team riders, you know. I love it. I think it's a great idea.
Ellie, what do you got, Ellie?
Yeah, so I've been thinking a lot of like what kind of happened this year. And I'm going to pick some, I guess, controversial news because I know there's been a lot of outrage with horse welfare, but I also think that there's been a lot of improvements in horse welfare that I've been excited about. And I'll be honest, I did not finish watching it, but you can watch the recap of the World Horse Welfare Annual Conference. And Pippa Fennell actually talked at it, the eventer. And I think it's just great the movements that we're making in terms of improving horses' lives outside of just health and safety, right? Like their mental well-being and their emotional well-being and things like that. I think it's kind of interesting the comparisons that have been made towards like zoo animals, which I think, you know, us horse people immediately are like, no, it's not the same, but it's kind of similar in the way that,
yeah. You know,
yeah. Right. These are domesticated animals, but they wouldn't live here by choice, you know? So like, how can we enrich their lives in a way that, you know, benefits them and then also have a athletic relationship with them? So I just thought it was a really interesting year for like, growth, I guess, for our industry in terms of, you know, being transparent with the non-horsey public, but then also in the horse industry, right? Like, you know, being adamant about wanting better welfare. So I guess that would be like my news of 2025. I think that we've made great improvements and I hope that it continues into 2026.
I love that, Ellie. I felt that too. I think there are people who are more willing to speak up and like challenge norms of, you know, this is the tradition and the way we've always done stuff and look at things based in science, right? And like how animals perceive us and training, that it's really opened my eyes, you know, to what we can be doing differently with horses. And I think it's, you know, some of it is noise, right? There's definitely noise on the internet, but some of it is really cool and important. So I'm kind of curious to see where we go from here. Mine's kind of in a similar vein to both of y'all's news, and I almost saved this for my Rose and Thorn, but I think my headline is going to be the UDJC, which is this new show circuit. We had David, the founder of it, on the last podcast.
Oh, is it so good?
Yeah, and so I went to my first UDJC show last month, and it was really cool. It's just a totally different vibe than what any of us are used to or have experienced. You know, like, you know, all USEF rated shows kind of have, you know, there's a format to it. There's like a way it flows. The UDJC really turns that on its head. And I found it to be like super welcoming. And, you know, everybody who came kind of didn't know what to expect or what to do. And all the UDJC staff, including David and his wife,
And a few riders, like the Dreaming Riding instructor, Ronnie Reamer, was there. Like, people who have are really trying to support this movement. They just, like, went out of their way to make sure people felt comfortable, that they understood what the rules were. And it was just very cool. I just had a fun time. Like, I felt like the pressure to like, do well just didn't exist because it was just fun.
Oh, that's nice.
And what I thought was the coolest part about the whole horse show was, at the end of your ride, whether you rode a hunter course or a jumper course or a dressage test, you stayed in the ring and waited a few minutes. And then the judge, like, had a conversation with you on a loudspeaker.
I think that's huge.
Yeah. I mean, so everybody could hear, you know, and I think some people found that, like, were worried that it was going to be nerve-wracking. But the feedback wasn't like, you chipped in at fence three and I had to dock you, or, you know what I mean? It was like, I noticed you lost pace in the corner, and, you know, once your horse got a little bit behind the leg, that really made the distance coming down that final line a little challenging, but your horse really stepped up for you. I could tell he really likes you. I think if you start, like, through next time, I'd love to see you, like, really put your leg on and maintain the pace through the corner and see what the line rides for you next time. And, you know, I had a couple of friends there who rode in, like, we all rode the different disciplines, which was cool too. So we all kind of got a taste of watching and seeing it. And a friend of mine who has a young Irish mare did the jumpers, and she started at like the 0.85s and then did the 95s and then did the, like, the meter five class. And she won the big class. She won the meter five class. But at that point, the judge had seen her, you know, two other times in other classes. And my friend Katie, like, applied the feedback that the judge had for her and had the best round of the day and the biggest, you know, and the biggest jumping that she did that day. And the judge rewarded her for it. So it was kind of,
awesome.
It was kind of cool to see, like, okay, I'm going to take this professional's advice and see if I can apply it in real time. But a lot of the feedback for me and dressage was all, like, spot on stuff. I know we were working on new, she offered new advice on how to, like, do exercises at home that could, like, freshen things up. It all just felt very cohesive, like almost like you were went to a clinic in some ways, but you got a ribbon, you know?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then the way you advance, like, you go to the next level for jumping or the hunters or dressage, they, like, really reward having the proper foundation, which I think so many people lack. I'm not going to lie. Like, so many people,
absolutely,
like, want to just go jump a big jump, but, like, don't know how to make their horse beyond the bit, you know? And so I really appreciated that. As someone who, like, appreciates flat work, I think there's a lot of holes there sometimes from other programs, and they were pretty European, I guess, is the vibe I would say about it. You know what I mean? Like, you should be able to do a first level dressage test, everybody, you know? Like, that's not advanced. It's just, like, understanding how to ride all the gates, you know? So, yeah, I just think it's an interesting, challenging, different kind of way to enjoy going and doing something with your horse. And I hope it continues to grow. But I think it's born out of, like, what you're talking about, Ellie. Like, people just want something different, you know, something that rewards the horse, something that isn't, you know, doesn't cost an arm and a leg to go and do, you know. So all it's right. Kind of nice to see, like, riders taking something back from, like, no, I want the sport to be focused on these things. These are what's important to me, not, like, chasing points or qualifying for indoors, or, you know what I mean? Which are all good goals too. Like, I don't feel like it takes away from other types of showing. It's just another option for people. So we'll see. We'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's exciting.
All right, everybody. I'm really excited to introduce our guest on this episode. We have Dr. Holly Helbig, an equine technical services veterinarian with Zoetis, who is here to talk to us about a number of things, from joint injections and joint health overall for our equine partners, to also fire security and health questions that we have for horses that travel from horse shows or for any reason. So, Dr. Helbig, thank you so much for joining us. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Justine.
So as we ease into the winter show season, a lot of people are getting their horses prepped and ready to get on the road, to travel across state lines in some cases, if they're fleeing the north where it's cold, to come horse show down here in Florida where it's warm. One of the things that most horse owners are thinking about right now is, how do we keep our horses safe and healthy
while so much is in transition, right? And when we go to horse shows, generally we're entering stabling where the stalls have been occupied by a horse before us, but those venues do their due diligence and are cleaning stalls in between the horses. But that's all stuff we don't really get to see with our own eyes, right? So I was wondering if you could talk to us a little bit more about how these venues employ biosecurity measures, like before and after horses arrive for a major event, or what's important for horse owners to know when they're wanting to be mindful about the horse's health when they're traveling.
Sure, that's a great question. And biosecurity is something we often don't think about until it's too late. So I love that you brought this up. You know, horse show events and facilities have done a really great job recently of being more proactive. You see them sanitizing hallways, sanitizing stalls, cleaning out shavings for you before you come in to put your horse in the stall. And those are all really, really important things that we like to encourage different horse show events because it really does help to minimize viral and bacterial problems in horses.
So what is it that they use at horse shows to keep stalls clean? Like, what's important for horse owners to think about? What stops the spread of disease?
Yeah, so what we can do for the horses is actually quite simple, and it's good husbandry, right? So we know that a lot of these horse shows are using a sanitized disinfectant. A lot of them are hospital grade, so they're more gentle on the horses. And hopefully they're spraying down the aisles, cleaning out the manure, spraying down the stalls in between. But what can we do as horse owners is, again, good hygiene. So a lot of the things that we worry about, like equine influenza or herpes virus, are envelope viruses. They're very easy to kill. Unfortunately, a lot of these viruses can live in water for up to 14 days or travel on our hands, our feet, our equipment that we're using on each horse. So using good hygiene, not only washing your hands, being careful not to touch a bunch of different horses, making sure that that horse's stall is clean prior to putting them in the stall is very important. And then again, not sharing, you know, a lot of tack and equipment can really help to decrease viruses that are spreading among horses.
Interesting. So would you say that also, like, I think of water troughs, right? Like when I take my horse on a trail ride and there's a shared water trough, is that something that horse owners should be aware of just, you know, what our horses can touch that other horses we don't know who had previously come in contact with something like that?
Absolutely. And I think we used to see a lot more of those big, large water troughs at horse shows. And they really have kind of limited those being available because we know now how long different viruses can live in water. It's kind of scary to think that it could be there for 14 days. So I always encourage horse owners actually to take some of their own water from the farm with them when they're traveling. One, because it can help that horse stay hydrated. Some horses are picky. They just don't like a different type of water. And then they really should be drinking out of their own water buckets that are designated for them in the stall while they're on the road.
That's a great tip. So what about beyond, like if you're headed to the horse show, you know, the horse show takes care of their own biosecurity measures. You know, they're cleaning the stalls and the aisles and the wash bays before you get there. But are there any other tips you would recommend that horse owners can do themselves to help keep their horse healthy?
Absolutely. So, of course, working with your veterinarian, making sure that horse is healthy before it gets on the road, not only clinically, but also making sure it's up to date on vaccines. Most horse shows require that you are at least up to date on equine herpes as well as influenza. And of course, the AAP recommends that horses are vaccinated with core vaccines, which would be Eastern, Western, tetanus, rabies, and West Nile virus. So not only can the horse owner, you know, be working with the veterinarian, making sure these horses are healthy clinically, making sure that they're sound before they get on the road, and then as well as making sure their vaccine status is up to date, are two of the most important things to start with. And then there's little things like thinking about when these horses get on the trailer, right? Are they on a big trailer where they're being shared with other barns and horses from across the country? Are those trailers cleaning or disinfecting in between the horses? When you arrive at the horse show, not letting that horse touch every single other horse that's there, right? Just little simple hygiene practices can be so important in helping to maintain their health.
Dr. Helbig, are there any tools that you recommend that horse owners should keep with them, maybe in their tack trunk when they're traveling with their horses? Just anything that will help them notice signs or symptoms if something is wrong?
Absolutely. All horse owners really should keep a first aid kit. And within that first aid kit, I strongly, strongly recommend having a thermometer, even a backup thermometer, because we know that those can break quite easily. Taking the horse's temperature before they head out to a horse show or getting on the trailer can be very important. We want to know what that horse's baseline is. Does it run hot? Does it tend to run cold? And then we also want to be able to take the temperature. We recommend twice a day while you're at the event to help monitor that horse. Sometimes the temperature can start to rise prior to clinical signs. Sometimes that temperature can rise prior to that horse shedding and becoming contagious. So by taking a temperature twice a day, we're able to help isolate, quarantine, pull those horses aside, potentially before they're contagious. So taking their temperature is important, as well as obviously watching for clinical signs, nasal discharge, cough, anything that appears abnormal to your horse, it's important to notify the veterinarian. So also I'll mention, beyond the thermometer, there's something called serum amyloid A, or SAA, that can be tested stall side. It just simply takes a small little drop of blood from your horse. It's put into a little lateral flow test, and within 10 minutes, you can get a value. What we know is that value, if it's above 50, tends to indicate some sort of infection due to inflammation. This can be extremely handy. It does get run by your veterinarian, so this is not something that typically you would have in your tack trunk, but it is a really nice preventative measure to test your horse before they get on the road, especially for long travel. And with that said, as a horse show veterinarian, a lot of people that did travel long distances would arrive, and we would be screening them again with their SAA. So potentially, if we were worried about shipping fever, secondary pneumonia, any type of viral infections, maybe another horse on the trailer was sick. So it can help us to determine if we need to quarantine or isolate horses or start treating them. So it's a really great tool. If you've never heard of it, it's something you could definitely talk to your veterinarian about.
And what about seasonality? We as humans, we experience a flu season, right? Are there certain risks that you see this time of year that maybe you see it more now than other times of year?
Sure. So as you would expect, as we enter into fall here, equine herpes virus, as well as equine influenza, tends to be more predominant. And we do know that equine influenza, especially as there's not as much ventilation, can be spread more readily as stall doors aren't open, right? And horses aren't sticking their head out quite as much, because at least up north here, we have to close all of those doors. So we do know that there's a higher prevalence of that, coming fall. Other fall things that I think about are colic, mostly because horses aren't drinking as much water. So that's why I recommend taking your own water with you sometimes when you're on the road, at least for the first day or two, just to get the horse acclimated. Other fall things I think about are maple leaf toxicity, which can cause colic, laminitis. We know that there's seasonal ACTH changes in the fall that can exacerbate insulin resistance. So there's lots of disease states in the fall that can become seasonal. But when we're on the road, the big one we're really thinking about is that equine herpes virus and equine influenza.
Got it. So Dr. Helbig, while we're here, I thought it might also be fun to talk more about a performance side of our horse healthcare. Just this year, my thoroughbred gelding, Mikey, was in the need of some maintenance. He's 14 years old. I had for several years been giving him Attaquan as a preventative maintenance sort of horse health item, but I realized he needed more care. And that's when I first learned about regenerative medicine products that are out there that my vet can prescribe and administer to my horse. And these new devices really seem to be a game changer in helping horses stay sound and feel good for longer as athletes and, as they're competing and have a competitive career. My horse is a dressage horse, and I'm pretty amazed at just how the science has changed so much from when I was younger. And we were, the only real option was to give relief from steroids, and that's just really changed. And I was hoping you could tell us more about, what is the common practice these days in maintaining soundness and overall health for horses that are competition horses. Can you talk a little bit more about those advancements we've made and why you're seeing the recommendation from veterinarians really sort of go towards these regenerative therapies now?
Sure. And I hope Mikey is feeling better.
He is. Great. Knock on wood.
Great. I love to hear that. Well, as you mentioned, through the years, we've gone from everything from administering just feed through like a phenylbutazone or an NSAID to then injecting joints using things such as steroids or hyaluronic acid. And we've really kind of developed into this new age of regenerative medicine, not only on the equine side, but it really is led from the human side, right? There's been a ton of research around PRP, which is a platelet-rich plasma, as well as ProStride, which we use in horses, which is similar to a PRP as well as an IRAP. So there's just been a lot of research around this, and we know that it's a very healthy option for the horses, as well as giving them more longevity. The steroids are great. They work very fast. They're good for a short-term solution. They're good for acute flares. But we also know that there can be some side effects around steroids. So again, short-term solution, but unfortunately, some of these steroids can cause a little bit of damage to the cartilage. And as the horses are competing at an older and older age, we're thinking as veterinarians about the longevity of their job, right? So these regenerative medicine devices, you know, how that works is it comes from the horse's own body, whether it's blood or fat or bone marrow. It is drawn from the horse. It is concentrated in a way to isolate more anti-inflammatory cytokines, as well as platelet-rich plasma that then can help the horse not only have anti-inflammatory effects, but it also can help the horse heal. So as we're moving into this and we're seeing these horses compete at a longer longevity in their life, regenerative medicine has really become quite popular. And the research that's going on is just astronomical, in my opinion. Zoetis has done a great job looking at a lot of different types of research in regenerative medicine, and it's continuing on. I know for a fact that there's many more studies to come.
It's so fascinating. I feel like as a horse owner, there's a lot to learn, and not just from regenerative medicine, but just the slew of products and procedures and devices that are out there. So how do you advise a horse owner who's trying to weed through all that? Like, when is it appropriate to consider something like ProStride versus something that is maybe a feed through supplement, like you mentioned, or even an intramuscular product, or, you know, there are a lot of options out there when we talk about joint health.
Exactly. And, you know, the first thing I'll say is working with your veterinarian based on what your individual horse's needs is going to be step number one. And I'll kind of answer this into two questions. So yes, there has been a ton of feed through IM injections, joint injections that are out there available. You know, they're all over social media. It's easy to buy in and think that it's going to be, you know, the one and done, you know, fix the horse's osteoarthritis and be done. The truth of it is they all work in a little bit of a different fashion. And in my opinion, they all can work together to help benefit the health of that horse. So, you know, feed throughs have been around for a long time. There's a lot of supplements. You know, they tend to have a bit of a slower onset. And I think of a feed through as more of a preventative type of therapy, a more preventative type of therapeutic than addressing OA or osteoarthritis that's more advanced. We do know those feed throughs have, you know, lower bioavailability. It has to be broken down by the stomach. So I would strongly recommend that if you're going to invest in a supplement in which they can be very expensive, that you look for one that has done some good clinical testing. There's also a lot of IM injections out there. These kind of came around because they're easier for the horse owner to administer, right? You don't always need the veterinarian there. They do have a systemic effect that supports cartilage and synovial fluid, and they can give the whole body some anti-inflammatory relief, right? But at the same time, you know, looking at that research, making sure that the one that you choose is able to deliver the results that's expected and that we're not wasting our money on anything. And then lastly, there are joint injections, which have been going on for a long time, but they're more of a targeted injection, right? We're looking at more of a targeted area. We tend to, you know, start injecting these horses as they start to break down in their career during signs of OA or other conditions could potentially, you know, require some joint injections. And I think you asked, you know, all these regenerative medicine devices that are out there, there's always a new trend that comes out every year out of Florida. And, you know, what I want to answer to that is looking at the research that these different companies are doing is really important. And I'm not talking about just safety studies in five horses. I'm talking about safety studies as well as true efficacy studies, true guidance on how to use the product and where to use the product is so important because there is, unfortunately, it's a device. So it's not as regulated as medications. And so it's really up to the horse owner and essentially the veterinarian to be doing their homework to make sure they're choosing the right product.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. You know, when I was walking through all these options for me and my horse, I think it really helped to have a veterinarian behind me that knew my horse, knew his history, knew what my goals were, and we could sort through all those options together, knowing all of that. So I agree that context is really important. And then having someone who is a trusted professional really goes a long way. Can you just tell me a little bit more about these regenerative medicine devices and just the effects you see, right? Like we've talked a lot about how they really are, they're a more longer term effect and they provide greater health benefits over time than maybe what you see with like a steroid, which helps with the pain or inflammation really fast. But why would you choose a device like this that is, you know, maybe if your horse doesn't have an acute injury, but you're thinking about how do I help keep him feeling better for longer?
Yeah, I think the key takeaway from regenerative medicine devices is that we're not only, you know, taking care of inflammation, but we're also looking at the process of healing, right? So through the years, we've used steroids, really good anti-inflammatories, but they don't promote healing. And therefore, you know, different regenerative medicine devices like ProStride APS can not only provide anti-inflammatory cytokines to address that, but then can also address healing of that joint. Because of that, I would say compared to steroids or some other types of therapies, sometimes these regenerative medicine devices take a little bit longer. Okay. I always warn horse owners, you know, you need to wait 2 to 4 weeks, sometimes even 6 weeks before you really clinically see better results. But we do know from our original efficacy studies, which I was actually a part of as a student at Ohio State when I was in vet school, that the horses showed efficacy or improvement in lameness for up to 12 months, which is pretty incredible considering that a lot of horses that are injected with steroids often get injected every 6 months. So lowering that risk of injection by not having to inject quite as often, being able to provide that horse 12 months of relief can really be a game changer in the world of soundness and performance horses.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like that. And I think it's great that there's so much research that anybody, all of us can look up and read for ourselves and see that impact. Dr. Helbig, is there like a perfect candidate that you think something like ProStride, like a horse that would really benefit from ProStride would be? Or do you feel like the health benefits are wide ranging, that there isn't just one perfect candidate?
I think it's very wide ranging, but I'll tell you where I started using it, if that brings some context to it.
Sure.
So I was the official horse show vet for pony finals. And as most of our listeners know, ponies tend to have a little bit more difficult with regulating their insulin. They tend to be a little bit more metabolic. And we know from studies that steroids can create insulin dysregulation as early as 2 to 4 hours post-injection and up to actually 96 hours. So they're more at risk of foundering or becoming laminitic. So as a veterinarian at these horse shows and seeing nothing but ponies for about 3 weeks straight, I put all my steroids back in the truck and I would use a lot of ProStride, not only in acute situations, but also in horses and ponies that just needed a little bit more support. The other place that I would recommend ProStride or I recommend to my clients is younger horses, because again, we're looking for longevity of their career. And these younger horses, it's just a healthier option to be able to use something like ProStride APS in a joint space compared to some of the other alternatives that we might have. But with that said, I've also seen horses, you know, with more severe osteoarthritis, and I've seen them do well. I think every case is going to vary a little bit. I think the timing, how often you administer, is going to vary a little bit. And again, you need to work with your veterinarian on that. but this is a pretty widespread available device that can be used in all types of horses and all types of different athletes.
Is there a specific time of year, like maybe now, fall, edging into the winter, that you would recommend horse owners be considering this? Because do you see a significant downtime from the treatment or no?
You know, there's not a lot of downtime. So I've seen everything from horses, you know, being injected to going into the ring 5 to 7 days later. But in the optimal setting, you would use this kind of during your downtime. So a lot of those horses that just spent all summer showing really hard, I would recommend a good lameness workup by the veterinarian and then coming up with a plan. Like, when are you expecting to go back out into the show ring? You know, if you're taking 3 months off, then maybe, you know, something like this could be used, let's say, a month in advance of going back into the show ring. Maybe these horses are continually on the road, and that's okay too. I've seen horses be injected and then go into the show ring pretty shortly after without a problem. But we do see maximum effects more in that 4 week mark. And so if you can work with your veterinarian to plan good timing on what your horse's needs are, what their show schedule is, that's when you're really going to get optimal results.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Dr. Helbig, so we've talked a little bit about ProStride, but I know there are other regenerative medicine devices out there that Zoetis uses and makes. Can you explain what other options there are?
Sure. And we often talk about ProStride because it's the most frequently used, right? So let me run through the different regenerative medicine devices that Zoetis has to offer. All three devices are autologous, meaning they come from the horse's own body. Again, the one we use most commonly is ProStride. So that is combining your platelet-rich plasma along with IRAP. So you have your anti-inflammatory plus healing properties. And this is most often used in the joint space. Another type of regenerative medicine device is called Restigen, and this is concentrating PRP, or platelet-rich plasma. This is actually the first step of ProStride, and so that can sometimes be a little bit confusing, but we often use PRP more in tendon and ligament injuries. ProStride is also healing, but it has even more healing properties to like a higher concentration, in which that's why that's often used in tendons and ligaments. And then the third one is something called Centrate BMA, and that is a bone marrow aspirate. So they actually stick a needle up into the sternum of the horse, and they're collecting bone marrow. They pull that out, they spin it down. That can create mesenchymal stem cells, which can differentiate into a lot of different things. It can be extremely helpful. And not only are you getting the stem cells, but you're also getting more of those anti-inflammatory cytokines, as well as that platelet-rich plasma that can be very beneficial to the horse. And those are often used, again, in tendons and ligaments. But we've seen it also used quite a bit, you know, post-op in horses that have to undergo some types of surgery. So again, we do offer three different devices: ProStride APS, Regenerative, which is PRP, or Restigen, which is PRP, and Centrate bone marrow aspirate. And they each can serve their own place. And that's, again, something to be decided between the veterinarian and what the horse is doing clinically.
So Zoetis has so much really helpful, easy to digest information about ProStride and other regenerative medicine and devices. We're going to share a lot of this in our show notes. So for listeners, if you're looking to learn more, definitely start there at heelsdownmag.com, and you'll find everything under the episode 143 show notes. We'll make sure we share those tools with you. But Dr. Helbig, is there anything else that you feel like listeners should know when they're thinking about joint health and appropriate care for their horses?
Yeah, I just will conclude. And again, there's not a one-stop shop, right? And there's not one product that is going to be superior to another in every single horse. There's so many variables, and working with your veterinarian to make sure that you're looking at all the different angles to help support your horse, especially a performance horse, is really, really important. So having that good, solid relationship, doing yearly or bi-yearly lameness exams can be crucial for getting these guys to be at their best performance.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Good. Well, thank you, Dr. Helbig.
Well, thank you.
Finally, horse show software you can rely on. HorseSpot offers cloud-based horse show management services for circuits around the globe. It's easy to use, so your horse show is easy to manage with proven results. Find out more by visiting www.horsespot.net today.
Looking for the perfect gift for the equestrian in your life? Don't miss our tried and true reviews in the Heels Down Holiday Gift Guide this year. You can see all our top 2025 picks at heelsdownmag.com and listen to our gift guide reveal on episode 142 of the Heels Down Happy Hour podcast. Cheers and happy holidays. All right, everybody. I'm really excited to introduce our next guest. It's definitely someone whose voice I think you will find familiar. So Sydney Steverson, who you might know on the internet as Boo-Kipsies, is an accidental horse influencer who has dedicated her platform to the delicate nuances of these ridiculous creatures we call horses. She's been a horse girl since she was just 8, and Sydney is all too aware of the highs and lows of life with horses and doesn't think anyone should have to do this crazy sport alone. Hey, Sydney, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Oh my gosh, we're so excited to have you. I'm a longtime follower. I've laughed at many of your videos of you sitting in the truck.
Oh yeah, in the truck.
It's a blast to have you here, so thanks for coming on.
Of course, yeah. I'm so flattered to be invited.
So, longtime horse girl, longtime eventer. Tell us a little bit more about like how you found horses, how you found eventing, and go.
Yeah. So, my mom signed me up for like a riding camp when I was 8 that she thought would just be like a fun summer thing. And that was her mistake. If it wasn't, it was immediately like an extremely unhealthy obsession. And I started out actually at a hunter barn because I'm from the Midwest and that's just what's most common around here. But I remember in 2001 watching the Sydney Olympics or the 2000 Sydney Olympics with my mom and being like, and seeing the eventing portion and being like, oh, I want to do that. Like, I absolutely want to do that. And then my parents were like, haha, cool, you're not doing horses anymore. This is crazy. So then, gosh, I stopped riding then when I was like, I'd only really ridden for like 3 or 4 years. And then I did everything they asked me to. And the second, like the millisecond I graduated from college, I got an off the track thoroughbred, just like ran to my friend's mom's barn. And I'm like, she had this huge, like 17 hand, dark bay, white socks, white blaze. And I was like, I'll take him. And so then I started retraining him. His name was Tamada. His name is still Tamada. He's still around. I started retraining him to be an eventing horse, and we got, you know, that was, gosh, 6 years ago. And so I started competing with him competitively about 6 years ago. And from there, I was like, okay, I really want to actually like try to do this really competitively. And so it went from there.
Nice.
So you've made a name for yourself on the internet by being funny, but also brutally honest. I really appreciate the mix of the content you share because it's so relatable. Not going to lie, I was just showing Matt, who is my horsey, not husband, your husband's reactions to what different disciplines are. And we were both cracking up. But like laughs, and like I was crying, like I loved it. And his reaction. But
yeah, I'll be sure to tell him. He'll be very excited about that.
He's connecting to other horse husbands.
Good.
But so like, what made you want to put yourself out there like that on the internet?
I love attention, but also like I used to drive like an hour to the barn and then an hour back home, and I would be so bored. And that's why so many things are filmed in my truck, because they would occur to me while I was driving. And so I would like film something really quick when I got home. And I thought, why not? Like, I had just gotten a TikTok and I was like, let's just do it because I'm bored and I like attention. So I just went for it. And like, I was like, I don't see a lot of people doing skits where they're pretending to be a horse. So I think this is a niche market I can really lock in on. And it turned out people were really into it, which I am every day baffled by, but grateful for.
And so what was the moment, do you think, that like really accelerated your Boo-Kipsies account? Like, was there a particular video? Like, what made you cross that threshold into, oh, crap, now I'm a horse influencer?
I don't want to brag, but it was like one of my first videos I did. If job interviews were like, if you were an off-track thoroughbred being interviewed for a job interview, and people were like, no, this is what retraining an off-track thoroughbred is like, because that's what I've primarily had. Like, my two main eventing horses were thoroughbreds. Now I have two warm bloods because I was like, that was hard. And see, I don't want to try hard anymore. So I have two warm bloods. And so it was after that, people were like, this is really funny. And I was like, well, you know, I have like a whatever boring day job. This could be something I can do on the side and maybe can start helping, you know, to bring attention to the sport. And maybe, you know, my dream was like, oh, maybe can help like pay some farrier bills. That would be great. And just stuff. But also because I thought, you know, like there had never been somebody when I was growing up watching horseback riding that like looked like me. So selfishly too, I was like, well, I can be one of those mavericks. And so that was sort of it. But also it was just fun.
Okay, so as an elder, quote unquote elder millennial, I'm like, remember those emails you used to get that like the Egyptian prince needed your money or whatever? Yes. And like, that's what TikTok feels like to me, where I'm like, this is a trap.
It sort of is. Yeah, no, it's fair. That's fair.
So I'm like, no, I can't trust it. But I'm old. So which platform do you think is better? Do you prefer like Instagram over TikTok? Or vice versa?
Honestly, I was just talking about this with my husband today of like, it's really funny because I just upload all of my videos to Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Like, mm-hmm. I just try to do them all at the same time because it's pretty easy to do that.
Sure.
And it's funny to me, some videos will gain no traction on one of the platforms and then take off on one of the other ones. So right now my favorite is Instagram because I have a really like video doing really well on there right now. But then like tomorrow it'll be TikTok because I'll have a video going well there, you know? So it's like, it's kind of nice because you could kind of diversify. And then when you have a dud on all three, you're like, ugh, right. But
good to know. So, you know, it's just the tech bros controlling the algorithms that we have no control over, but
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
But it's different ones. Yeah, it does. It also depends too. Like Facebook, you're going to get, no offense, Facebook, a little bit of an older audience, you know, and they're going to send you really heartfelt comments that are 17 paragraphs long.
Oh, they just love you.
And you're like, and there's 3,000 emojis and 14 pictures of their horse. And you're like, I love this, Deborah. Thank you. I love this.
It's very sweet.
And then over on TikTok, you'll get all lowercase, like a 15-year-old LOL. And you're like, fantastic. Thanks, buddy.
But you use your platform like to really brighten people's day. And like your example is a perfect moment of that. Like, it doesn't really matter how old you are. It's like you capture that horse girl audience, like of, you know, the vast diversity in the barn of like different age groups, mm-hmm. different walks of life, which I think is really cool. But you're also very honest about like your own horses or your own horse show experiences.
Oh yeah.
And I'm sure that takes a toll, right? Have you experienced like a downside to social media or sharing too much of yourself in some ways?
Luckily, I always say I'm extremely fortunate that the community I have built on all the platforms is incredibly nice and incredibly kind, not only to me, but like to each other. Very rarely are there like fights in my comments. And if somebody comes in with like a weird vibe, like I just delete and block them. Like, you're not, like, only good vibes in the club. You're not allowed in.
Sure.
So I think that has contributed a lot. There was the video I posted a few months ago at like my second attempt at modified, where I fell just directly into a table.
I do remember this. Yes.
And I posted a video crying, being like, this is awful and I'm homesick. And I think I had put a lot of pressure on myself because at that show, people were like, we're going to come watch. And like, somebody made a sign for Superman. Like,
oh, wow.
And she was at the jump that I fell into.
Oh, no.
At the sign. So I'm just like on the ground. So, but obviously everyone was very nice. And like, as I'm taking out, you know, that horrible moment when you're like taking off your horse's tack after like a horrible round and you're just crying. And like, this mom comes up with these two girls that like want to take pictures and say hi.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I could be like a jerk about this, but I obviously like don't want to be, right? Like, it was also kind of a nice way to get me out of my own head, because I would have just sat by Superman sobbing for like 25 minutes. And then this way, at least I like couldn't do that. So that was good. So the only negative, I think, is like the pressure I've put on myself to keep like growing and to keep showing improvement and to keep like always kind of on the up and up of like really good horsemanship and good care, you know, because I just don't want to like fall behind on that and be a bad, just because I know there's eyes on me. I don't want to be a bad advocate. So like, but that's never been put on by outside people. That's just me.
Sure.
Kind of putting that pressure on myself.
Okay. I mean, that feels healthier than what it could be, you know? So.
Yeah, 100%. No, I know, I've heard horror stories of like what happens to, you know, influencers and people that, and I feel very fortunate that that has not happened to me yet. Knock on wood, please. Everyone stay cool.
Well, so in those same lines, right? What are your goals with, you know, we're at the end of the year. What are your goals with horses in eventing, you know, but then also with your social media? Like what are your goals?
So, well, right now I have a month off and the horses have a month off, because that's a big thing. I'm always like, horses need, especially like show horses like mine, need like a month off in the year where we don't talk to each other and we don't look at each other. Because otherwise, you know, we're just on top of each other all the time. So right now it's rest. But my big goals, you know, I would love to become an advanced rider and compete at 4-star and 5-star. And I think I'm in a program now that that could happen, right? And I think, you know, probably not with Superman. He's a little bit old. No offense, Superman. He's 16. But, you know, our big goal with him is to get him around, you know, a 2-star. Maybe a 3-star if he feels like he's, you know, still got it in a couple of years, which so far he's acting like he's 7. So, you know, fingers crossed. And so those are sort of our big goals. And then from there, you know, my big thing has always been wanting, you know, more diversity in the sport and giving more opportunities for kids that maybe wouldn't have access to the sport otherwise, you know, like especially kids that live in cities, it's hard. They don't see farmland, right? So having opportunities for kids to come out and ride or don't ride or just get to be around horses, because I truly do believe there is something magical about horses. Like that's the only way I can put it. There's just something about them that for certain people is just like so healing, you know, and so important for them. And I think it's important that more kids and people from different walks of life get access to that. So that's sort of my goal with the social media, is be able to sort of create opportunities like that and team up with people to make stuff like that happen.
I love that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So is there like a number one question all of your followers ask? Like, is there like one question that you always get asked?
Why don't you have hair?
Really?
A lot are like, where's your hair? And I was like, I don't know. This shit said, I don't know. I'm actually growing it out right now to do Yeah, I know. It's thrilling. No, I mean, the big thing people are like, well, what do you, you know, people always want to know what I do for a living. And I'm like, it's really not that exciting. I'm just like a freelance editor. It's not anything cool.
That is cool. You're talking to two word people, so we get it.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, that helps. And yeah, it's, I do get like just like a lot of different questions, or, you know, whenever I make a video complaining about horses, people are like, why do you hang out with them if you don't like them that much? And I'm like, you don't get it.
Yeah.
Every horse girl loves horses, but also hates horses, because we know what they get up to. So those are the big ones. But I get a ton of different kinds of questions, which is cool.
That is cool. Well, it feels like 2025 was like a great year for you, for your riding, professionally, mm-hmm. for you on the internet. It was very cool to see you with Anna Buffini at Maryland. Like, how cool was that? Are you looking to do more with your platforms in 2026? It feels like this is just the beginning for...
Yeah, hopefully. You know, fingers crossed. I don't want to, like, jinx anything, but, you know, I got my first, you know, sponsor, so that was exciting.
Yeah.
So, shout out Castel Denmark. But... So, you know, like stuff like that, obviously, you know, my main focus is always the competition and the horses. So that to me, like that will always be my main focus, and I'll kind of tailor the social media, you know, around that as best I can. But, you know, getting to work with places like Eventing Nation to go to these big events, I think there's more that they want me to do next year. So that's exciting and stuff that I can, now that I'm sort of moving to the East Coast, there's more events that I'm closer to that I can go see and cover and watch and stuff like that. So that's sort of the plan. But it's sort of, so far, I'm not really planning anything and it's working out all right. So I'm going to stick with that.
Yeah, just roll with it. Roll with it.
Right.
Well, Sydney, so if our listeners want to tune into your pages, where can they find you?
So on TikTok, I am at Boukipsies. At Instagram, I am at Boukipsies with an underscore at the end. And I think on Facebook, it's either Sydney Steverson or at Boukipsies. You can find me both ways on Facebook. And I try to, everything I post on one platform, I try to post on all of them. So you'll never miss anything if you just want to be on one platform.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Even if you're a young millennial who is more of a Facebook crowd.
Right. Exactly.
Well, but you know, I'm old, so.
Oh boy. Well, Sydney, it's been awesome to have you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. I've had a great time. This is awesome.
Did you know your veterinarian can use your horse's own blood to help heal lameness? The ProStride APS regenerative medicine device is designed to help you keep your horses feeling and performing their best. Zoetis is always by your side in the barn, down center line, and everywhere in between. It's Rose and Thorn. You guys ready?
Yeah. Who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Well, go for it.
So mine's the same. So we canceled. No, we canceled Thanksgiving this year.
Just didn't do it.
Well, so we were supposed to do a whole like thing. We were going to go to Nashville for like a day and a half, and then we were going to go to Jersey, and we were going to see all of our families and like knock it out and be one big thing. Well, you guys know Doug has his pilot's license. We fly and everything else. Well, every year the plane goes into annual, like just for maintenance, everything else. Well, this year they were so backed up. There was nothing wrong with it. They just took forever to get to it. And so when it wasn't ready, it just became too complicated. Doug and I were like, you know what? We're just going to cancel it. Like, we didn't want to go to one family's, like you're picking one and not choosing the other, and we couldn't do it all. So we said, screw it. We're canceling Thanksgiving. And Sunday before Thanksgiving, I ChatGPT'd where I should go, basically. And it was going to be really cold. So I didn't want to go to the coast. So we picked the mountains. We've never been to the town of Blowing Rock. And so,
oh, it's so cute.
Oh my gosh, we chose Blowing Rock. We stayed at the Embers right in downtown. They had
perfect.
A special 50% off hotel rooms. And
wow,
they had a Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah. So, and they had a Thanksgiving dinner. It was incredible food. I didn't cook. I didn't clean. We walked around the town. We went hiking, went to the waterfalls. Like, it was so much fun, like so much fun. And so, yeah, it was like a last minute, just drive to the mountains and canceled it. But then obviously my thorn is that we didn't get to see any of our families. Like that was the whole plan. But as an alternative, like, oh, hands down, anybody should go to Blowing Rock. It's the cutest town.
It's Embers, so adorable.
Like the staff was amazing. The food was incredible. Like,
I love it.
It might
there.
Be my new family. I love it. Love it. It was our first time. We always go over towards like Banner Elk and everything or like Beach Mountain and stuff. So we never make it into Blowing Rock. Like we just, and we've never done the horse show there or anything else, but hands down the cutest little town.
I heard the horse show's nice.
At pictures right now too. It looks beautiful. Like
the waterfalls
scenery and stuff.
It did say that it was like a moderate to severe hike. And I'm like, oh, it can't be that hard. We're in North Carolina. It was like actually all down. And our kids were such troopers because we're like, oh, we're going down. It means when we go 2 miles in, we have to turn around and hike up the 2 miles. And the kids like loved it. So we did that Thanksgiving morning. And like they had like a chess and a bunch of board games downstairs. And like, so we sat there and they had coffee and it was the cutest little like hotel. And it was perfect.
Aw. I'm so glad you guys had a good time. Yeah, we've been to Blowing Rock a handful of times, but it's usually when we go to beach or something, or we're like, are we going to Boone? You know what I mean? It's like we're in that part of town.
And we went gem mining. It was so fun. The kids, like, they had a great thing. It was on the way in from Boone. So we stopped in Boone and had lunch. And we've gone through Boone, but we always go over to Beach. And, you know, we just go the wrong direction from Blowing Rock, basically.
Yep. Yep.
So, Ellie, what do you have?
Well, my thorn is an easy one because I had to get my first ever stitches. And
your first ever?
First ever, never had stitches before, and I had to get 5 of them in my face. My poor barn cat, who like is always great at the vet, just got overstimulated with some Texan training, learning how to draw blood, and so he jump into my arms for me to save him. But he jumped into my face instead. So he like cut my lip, like where my mustache would be, and then into my actual lip. So I had to get stitches to line my lip back up. So the top of my lip is still looking like a lip. So if I sound weird, it's because now I got my stitches out today, but now I just have to wear this like weird, like, you know, the wound closure strip. So now I do have like a little mustache. But yeah, my thorn, just because I wasn't on my bingo card for 2025 to have to get stitches. And then obviously it's a barn cat scratch. So I'm also on antibiotics because cat scratch fever is a real thing.
It is. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's been an interesting thing to adjust to because you guys know I love to make jokes and laugh and I can't smile because it would pull on my stitches. So like, and that made everything funny. Like, I'm like, Matt, we can't watch this TV show. I'm going to laugh. Matt, you can't say this. You're going to make me laugh. He's like, do you want me just to piss you off instead? I'm like, even that's funny. I'm like,
that is actually really funny, to be honest.
Yeah. So it's been hard. So I'm happy to be able to smile again because that has been very difficult. Rose is that Brave has started her radiation treatment. She's had 2 treatments. She had her second one today. And so far, she's doing really well, which is great. And then also, like, I just had so much support from friends and family. And I made all these stockings and stuff. And I even had some listeners donate. And her first 2 treatments were paid for from the donations, which just was huge because that took a chunk out of that, you know, that took like a $1,700 chunk out of the $11,000 that this is costing. And that was just massive. So I'm really just grateful for that. I mean, I'm grateful that she's doing well. So fingers crossed, and I'm happy because she'll be done right before Christmas. So it should be good.
Oh, I hope she keeps doing good for you.
Yeah. What about you, Justine?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I already told you about UDJC, so that can't be my rose. But I think my rose is that I am currently leasing a horse. I mean, Mikey's I should say Mikey's fine. Yes. So
oh my goodness.
Asterisk. Mikey's okay.
Still riding Mikey too. But a fellow boarder at my barn who has quickly become a really good friend has a lovely thoroughbred named Kato, and her name is Mary, and she has for the last year played the long game to try to get me to lease her horse because she's a little bit younger than me, but married and is ready to they're ready to start their family. So they've been trying to get pregnant this year and she got pregnant and And so she's like, I just want him to be out on lease with somebody I know who will take good care of him, yada, yada. And he's a show jumper. He's a thoroughbred. She did like the meter jumpers with him. And he's just a lovely guy. He has kissing spine. So how I started chatting with Mary is she was like, can you like help me with flat work to help, you know, help support his back, yada, yada. So for like the last year or so, I've ridden him like occasionally, you know, and showed her like, here's some things for you to do when you ride, you know. And that sort of snowballed into me riding him more regularly. And flash forward to this month, Mary had her baby. She had a beautiful baby girl named Riley. And she she works in like advertising marketing, and she's very good at her job because she talked me into signing a lease. And so I leased in Cato for like half a year to start. And I honestly couldn't do this without the support of my husband, Alex, who is paying for it. It is like the all-time Christmas plus birthday gift all wrapped into one. But I feel very grateful to both Mary and Alex for that. And it's just like exciting to like have something to look like fun to look forward to. Like I don't, you know, I'm not like gonna go hard and show hard, but like go back eventing a little bit with my eventing girls, like friends that I haven't really, that I take Mikey out there and just sort of like hack around the hills, you know, on the cross country course. It'll be nice.
Yeah.
To jump around again. And Mary is totally game about me eventing him. So yeah, I'm really excited. I think it'll be fun. So
that'll be a lot of fun.
Stay tuned. Yeah, stay tuned for more because we're going to go eventing and I'm very excited. So that is my rose. Oh, my thorn. Let's see. What could my thorn be?
That's always a good episode.
That's
when you're
a
like,
great one.
What is my thorn?
I know, right? I think it's just, gosh, I just picked up my truck today just like for routine service and like it needs new tires, that kind of thing. Why is everything so darn expensive? I just was like sticker shocked for like routine stuff where I'm like, this is not so crazy. Like I just need four tires on the truck and like it's never cheap, right? But now it's like, no. I feel like it's quadrupled in the price. And I'm just like, geez, I just bought a couple of like three tie bales of alfalfa and I'm like, what the heck? It's like unreal how expensive stuff has become. Mm-hmm. So that is my thorn where I'm just like, at some point, like, aren't we supposed to get used to it? But I'm just like always shocked at how expensive stuff is right now. It's like, whew, could use a little bit of relief there.
Right.
Yeah.
But all right, guys, we have a mailbag from Julie who posted this in the Facebook group. She is looking for like the best idea for trainers gifts that we have. I think we have a couple of great ones from the gift guide this year. But Ellie, just since you guys are both trainers, you have clients. I mean, what is it your trainer really wants? Like not a gift that they're like cool things they might use. You know what I mean? Like what do trainers really want? I'm curious of your thoughts.
So for gift me, cards.
yeah, gift cards, Amazon gift cards. No, but also like something kind of that like would help at the barn, you know, like I know I've known friends or whatever else that like clients all go together and then they like go in and get like a big gift, like a jump or something else. Then they can utilize it well, but then it's for the farm.
Totally.
Yeah.
So something like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely done that.
Something big. But like if it's for the farm or whatever else, or even if it's like something just, you know, that's like they've had a moment with their horse or whatever else and they frame it or put it on a mug or something like that. Those are always cute and stuff. But yeah, like if you do something, like if you do like a big present to have a bunch of like the people go in, those are always super fun.
Yeah. Something that I used to do for like my trainers growing up that I now would love. So if my students are listening to this, you can always do this for me. But everybody to contribute for a gift card to go get massages. Like I think that's
nice.
Like a great thing because I think those of us who, I mean, and I think this goes for every horse person, right? We make a lot of time for our horses to get, you know, chiropractic work and massage, and we don't do that for ourselves. I still have never seen a chiropractor in my life, but my horses see one every 3 months. Like, it's kind of insane. So it's like, you know, that kind of stuff, like things that force trainers to like candles, alcohol, things that make us like actually take time for ourselves outside of horses,
yes.
I think is always a great thing to do because that makes the job more fun when we have time away, you know?
Yeah.
That's a great thought. You know what I mean? When you're kind of thinking like, what will they enjoy? Like immediately, of course, my mind goes like stuff they need for the barn, which is nice. You know, I've definitely like chipped in on all the boarders bought like a new set of jumps for the arena. Or 1 year we bought like we put money towards like new arena lights for like, you know, riding at night. But I like those kinds of gifts too. Like I've always done like I've done like a spa gift card and a nice bottle of wine for my trainer. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like I know what her show colors are. So I bought her like a few like really nice shirts and in the colors that she likes, you know.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Just stuff that like is personal, but, you know, just makes it easier for them. You know, I think that goes a long way. So if you have a question for us and you want us to answer it on the air, you could always send us an email at justine@heelsdownmedia.com or join our Facebook group. That's where Julie posted this question. It's the Heels Down Happy Hour Facebook or Heels Down Happy Hour Podcast Lounge, which you can find when you search on Facebook. And if you want to hear more from us, check out heelsdownmag.com. for the latest news and follow us online. We're at Heels Down Happy Hour on Instagram and at Heels Down Mag on Facebook. And if you love our show, please give us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, thanks to our sponsors this month, Horsespot and Zoetis. That's a wrap, guys.
Last cheers of 2025.
Oh my gosh. Cheers 2025.